our understanding of it. God talks about the universe and all the beauty that's around us, and how in our limited understanding of it, we are, in essence, part of that too. A little bit of a background on the book of Job. It's one of the three books of wisdom in the Bible, the other two being Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. It's said to be the oldest book in the Bible, and we're not certain, but Job might have lived during the time of Jacob or shortly thereafter. He lived in a land called Uz, but no one really knows where it was located because there's no geographical information surrounding the book of Job. It was probably near the desert because the customs and the vocabulary and the references in the readings are related to the northern Arabia area. Some of the cues that tells us that it's from that time, it's because he lived during the time of the patriarchs, which is approximately 2100 to 19 BC. Just a little bit of geographical background. According to Job 42:16, he lived about 210 years, about 140 years more after the reading of today was related. And the book is organized into 42 chapters. It's almost like a poetry. It's a prose to the beauty of the universe, to the beauty of the creation, to the majesty of the things that surround us. The chapter 1 and 2 is an introduction to the suffering that Job goes through, the Satan's proposition and God's permission to give Job all these difficulties that he goes through in this book. In chapter 3, he curses his birth and his life. In chapter 4 to 32, he discusses the suffering with his friends, and we understand the limited knowledge that he has and the many opinions that he has as well. And on chapter 32 to 41, God talks about the correction of the suffering. And lastly, chapter 42, we see the submission under the suffering and the restoration from suffering. It's really a very well laid out book and beautifully written. And the book delves into issues that is common to all of us. Why do good things happen to bad people? I mean, we hear in the news terrible things that happen all over the world, even in our own neighborhood, to good people. Why does God allow bad things to happen to good people? I think that is the perennial question of every person who believes in God. We're always asking ourselves, even when something happens to us, the first thing that sometimes we say is, why is this happening to me? Right? Why am I going through this? I'm a good person. I do good things. I try to be an outstanding citizen, a good mother, a good daughter, a good friend, a good professional. Why are things happening to me? And sometimes they seem to happen one after the other, which is what happened to Job. Job was, according to the book, a very successful man. I think nowadays we will call him probably a multimillionaire. He had vast lands. He has a lot of animals. He had a lot of slaves, and he had children. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters, and he was a man who governed with authority. He said that children will walk away from him when he came into the room, and that elders will stand up for him, which is a sign of authority and respect. But then one day, all of a sudden, everything dropped out of his floor, as they say. Everything he had, he lost, one by one by one. He got 4 messengers that came to him. And one after the other, he lost his land and his animals, and he lost his slaves. And then he lost his children. And on top of that, he was smitten by boils on his skin. He got very ill. And yet, he worshipped God. He never succumbed to saying, why is this happening to me? I don't believe in God anymore. He persevered in believing in God. Even when his wife said, why do you not question God when this is happening to you? And he said, we accept prosperity from God. Shall we not also accept misfortune? That is a very hard thing for us to understand and to accept, right? We are wonderful when we have things that are going on for us, that are going well. But when something bad happens, we are the first one to say, God, why? Right? We didn't ask why we have a home. We didn't ask why we have warmth in our home. We didn't ask why our children are healthy. We didn't ask why we have a job. But if we lose one of those things, we immediately say, what is happening, God? What are you doing to me? What is wrong with you? And if it doesn't happen to us, who will it happen to? Why are we not allowed to suffer? Why are we not allowed to go through tribulations and trials? Why are only that is supposed to happen to other people and not us? Well, when Job was going through this, difficulties and tragedies, three of his friends came and they sat with him for 7 days and night, almost like sitting Shiva. I equate that to that because Job has had so many losses. So he was mourning his losses. He was mourning the person that he was. He was mourning his standing in society. And after 7 days and seven nights, the friends began to question him. And say, you know, God is just. He goes by with justice. So you must have done something wrong for you to have this happen to you. You got to look at yourself. You must have done something really, really bad for all of this tragedy to be happening to you. And that is something that we understand, right? When something bad happens to someone, we say, what did you do? What did you do to create this problem? So that's what their friends did, and they do it in such a beautifully way. It's almost like a sarcastic conversation back and forth throughout those chapters. And they insist that he must have done something really terrible to deserve all of these illness and losses that are happening to him. But Job is getting angry. You know, he's been patient and he's been saying, no, God is with me and God will always be with me. But at a certain point, he begins to get frustrated with all of this. And he said, you know, I helped the blind. I saved the poor. I defended strangers all the time. I punished the wicked. The elders listened to me. This is not fair what is happening to me. And he begins to question God. And in every sentence of this book around this time, it starts with a question. Why? Who? How come? He's getting really angry. And he's saying, God, you're not with me. I don't see you anymore. You're not by my side. You have abandoned me. I think we can all feel that frustration when we read those chapters. And I think we can feel it because we've gone through it. When something is happening, when a tragedy strikes those that we love or the things that we hold dear to us, we say, no, this is not right. I am getting really angry here. And God, you're not listening to me. You're not with me. You're supposed to be helping me. You're supposed to be saving me from all of these tragedies. It's almost like a small child looking up at her mother or his mother and saying, I want another cookie for dinner, right? And the mom said, no, you can't have any more cookies for dinner. But the child doesn't understand. He just wants the cookie. And that was Job in his limited understanding. He said, this is not fair, God. You're not with me. I am getting angry. And then all of a sudden, God appears to Job. Boy, he's going to get his answers now. Only that Job doesn't get the answers that he expected from God. God goes on a beautifully well expressed litany of what the universe is all about. And Job keeps questioning him. And they go back and forth. And God never answers the direct questions that Job has for him. For almost 90% of this book, Job struggles with the feeling of God's distance and silence. And now God says to him, "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth?" Imagine that. "Can you raise your voice to the clouds and cover yourself with a flood of water? Can you create waterfalls? Can you create the sky and the moons and the stars? Can you create the forest?" This is way bigger than Job's worries right now. Job doesn't understand what's going on. He doesn't understand what God is saying to him, because we all have such limited understanding of the majesty of God that God doesn't even make an effort to answer his questions, because he knows we're not going to understand the complete majesty that he has created for us. But what God does with Job is that it takes him out of his own misery by saying, "You are only a small speck in the universe. You're not everything. The world doesn't revolve around you all the time. I have bigger things to do than to answer to your anger and your temper tantrums." Because that's exactly what Job did. It's almost like a three-year-old throwing himself on the floor in the middle of the supermarket. You can't walk away. You can't look away. And you're judging the mother and saying, "My God, that mother is not really good. Look what that child is doing," right? That's our first thought sometimes. So Job is having his temper tantrums, and God is waiting patiently and just observing. And when he's ready now, he says, "Oh, I'm going to tell you what the problem is here. The problem is not me. The questions that you have are not for me to answer, because you're not going to understand what I have to say to you." So he talks about the majesty of the universe. And every time he says something about his creation, it's all about animals and forests and rivers and water and sky and moon and stars, and not about humanity, not about the people, not about a human being. Because God is that majestic. It's not about individual people. It is up to us to have an individual connection with God. It is up to us to try to understand what he's trying to tell us. But we're not going to understand everything, just like a three-year-old will not understand why he can't have a cookie for dinner. It is beyond our understanding. It is beyond our imagination. And God says to him, "You know, get up your loins," he said. "There is a force at work in this world that is wild, uncontrollable, mysterious, glorious, and untamable, uncontainable, powerful beyond your wildest imagination. It is like a fire. It is like roaring. It is majestic. It is powerful. It is all-encompassing." And Job doesn't understand that at that moment, because he's suffering with his own problems. I think we've all been there for certain. We've all had tragedies in our lives. Even during the most difficult times in our lives, sometimes we feel like we're alone, that nobody's there for us. We don't understand why we're going through such difficulties. But we're not alone. We may not see God at that moment because we have a very limited understanding of his power. We're not alone when we're suffering, or when our children suffer, or when our families suffer, or when our country suffers. We just don't understand what is happening in the background. God never thought that Job was a bad person. He had some dealings and wheelings with the character called Satan. And Satan said, you know what? Do you know why he believes in you? Because he's wealthy, because everything is going well for him. That's why he believes in you. And God said, oh, really? I'm going to show you what I'm going to do with this person. And I'm going to show you, hopefully, that his faith won't quiver, that he will be true to the scriptures. And that's exactly what Job did. He was angry at God. He questioned God. But he never really gave up on God. Even when we doubt in the readings, even when he gets so frustrated through his temper tantrums and we think, huh, he's going to give up. He's questioning God. He's angry. But it's okay to question God. Because that's how we think as humans. We need answers. We have questions and we need answers to those questions. But we don't always understand the answers. Sometimes the answer is, you have to wait. It's not time yet. It's not time for you to understand what is happening yet. And those are very difficult answers to accept. The readings of this book reminded me of a poem that I've read a while ago, and I think I read it here before. And it's called The Excesses of God. And it's a poem by Robinson Jeffers. And it's one of my favorite poems. I do a lot of hiking, and whenever I hike, all throughout the year, I get immersed in the beauty of the forest and the mountains and the colors and the little critters around and the waterfalls and the icicles that you see along the way when it snows. And it is such a beautiful place. I call it my happy place. So this poem reminds me of all the beauty that surrounds us if we look hard enough. Is it not by his high superfluousness we know our God? For to be equal in need, it's natural, animal, mineral. But to fling rainbows over the rain, and beauty above the moon, and secret rainbows on the domes of deep sea shells, and make the necessary embrace of breeding beautiful as fire, not even the weeds to multiply without blossom, nor the birds without music. There is the great humaneness at the heart of things, the extravagant kindness, the fountain humanity can understand and would flow likewise if power and desire were perch mates. It talks about exactly what Job talks about in the book, and what God described as his creation. So let's not forget that when we are going through difficult times, when our lives is full of temper tantrums, that we're not alone, even if we feel alone, that we have to trust and have faith that God is always with us. Okay. Amen. Thank you. Amen.